Already. Okay, you reset the clock.
Sure.
So we're just starting off in a couple of minutes. So welcome to the Azure conference. Welcome to the data services track. And welcome to Sabha 1, which is this room. So how are you feeling today? Can all of you hear me at the back? Yes, yes, hands, show of hands. Thank you. How many of you have already used Azure SQL Database? Well, that's a nice number. And how many of you have used V12? All right. And how many of you have experimented with some of the disaster recovery options in Azure SQL Database? Okay. All right. So we have a lot of people who have used Azure SQL DB. Some of you have tried out V12, which is really the new version that we released. And some of you are also familiar with disaster recovery, but maybe not a lot of you. So it's a good mix for us to talk through this session. Okay, so we have about 55 minutes in front of us once we start. And then in this time, we'll try to cover some key elements of performance and disaster recovery. It's a technically focused session on Azure SQL Database. Also, we will use this time to show you a couple of demonstrations of some of these features. Again, I and Mandar are going to be available outside this room after this session because it's limited time that you have there, and you know, we welcome any questions you might have. As we are waiting for the session to roll, I'm just going to start out with a couple of introductions.
Sorry?
Are those giveaways?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay. So, you have the prizes in front of you. So, my name is Rangarajan. I work in Microsoft in the customer advisory team, which is part of the Azure engineering team. My team focuses on doing projects which are significant in complexity, scale, and the usage of new features across the world on Azure.
Hello, good morning. I'm Mandar Inamdar. I work as a principal consultant with Microsoft, working on data platform mostly, data platform analytics, and with the cloud part in the Azure as well.
Thank you so much. So welcome to the session on Azure SQL Database. We will focus on two of the aspects which a lot of customers have either challenges with or those are areas of interest. Azure SQL Database performance and disaster recovery, that's what this session is about. In Azure SQL Database, we have actually a number of different features that have come in through the new release. So I was just asking people how many of you are familiar with V12. So V12 is really the new version of Azure SQL Database with the aim of being almost completely compatible with the on-premises database version, which is SQL Server. As you know, SQL Server runs on virtual machines, it runs on-premises, and then you have Azure SQL Database, which is database as a service. Now, Azure SQL Database in its newest avatar V12, and you can also use the prior version too at this point of time, is built on the 2014 SQL Core engine. Prior to this new release, a couple of often recurring challenges for customers have been around. I've been using these features, these specific set of features on SQL on VMs or on the existing well-known version, which is fully featured. And if I use the relational database service on Azure SQL DB, there are certain limitations. Most of those limitations are now gone. And the engine is almost completely compatible with the on-premises version. So all of those favorite queries and operators which you used to use on the relational database on-premises now work on the engine. Apart from that, we have really focused on three main aspects. One is performance, especially on scale and raw performance, which is the speed of querying. Then on business continuity. Also more self-management features. On performance, we are going to focus on on raw performance, query performance, and some of the things that you can do in this session. But what we've also done is we have brought in a layer called Elastic Scale, which is basically at the client library level. People who are using cloud database typically tend to shard or split the data in databases either by horizontal, vertical partitioning, whatever, into multiple databases. Now there is a layer in the client library by which you can start working with shards in a very easy way, split your queries to hit multiple individual shards, take the results, and aggregate them and so on. Though we don't cover that in this session, it's great to look at in terms of what you can do on building very, very highly scalable and distributed database as a service as an option. What we've also done is we have focused a lot on security as well. Now on Azure SQL Database, for example, you can do auditing, you can do row-level security and so on, which were not available previously. And some of these features are very easy to use. You can just go to the portal and look at auditing and stuff like that. We have done a lot on disaster recovery, and you have like four different new options now coming onto Azure SQL DB. We'll talk about that. And then we've also done a number of things on performance, and especially on DMVs, compression, and stuff like that. We'll talk about that also. Though the number of features that have come into the new version are large in number, this being a depth session, we are going to focus on performance and DR mainly. But at the end of the session, you are welcome to catch either of us, and then we can help you with any questions you have on anything to do with Azure SQL Database. Before going into the session, we must also mention that we have three new tiers in Azure SQL Database, again, oriented towards some of the things that we wanted to introduce into this product. Previously, you had a web and business edition. Now you have three different editions, basic, standard, and premium, with different performance levels, different what we call as database throughput units, which gives you a performance scale, and then different business continuity options and so on, different price to feature trade-off. So for example, let's say you want to do business continuity, there are various options which match price needs with feature needs. The most fully featured one is what is called as active georeplication. That is available in the premium tier. You have standard georeplication in standard tier. Of course, the premium tier is all of what the other tiers have. And then in basic, you have georestore, point-in-time restore, and some of those kinds of features. It's basically a way by which you can get predictable performance at different costing options that you have. And within each tier, there are numbered suffixes by which you can make adjustments on price versus performance, price versus feature, which is most comfortable to you. With that, I'll hand it over to Mandar, who will take you through some of our key features focusing on performance.
Thank you, Ranga. So we'll jump into the performance aspects of the Azure SQL Database. Before getting into the details of what are the features as far as performance is concerned, let's understand few of the key terms that you should be aware when we talk about performance in Azure SQL Database. So mainly is database throughput unit. So it's mainly a unit which is helping you to relatively compare overall service tiers. So we are so used to measuring, okay, what is the CPU utilization, what is the memory utilization, what is the disk I/O on the on-prem part of it. Over here, just to classify different service tiers and performance levels, the database throughput unit as the new term that has come in, based on which we actually compare various tiers. So what's DTU, as it is called, as database throughput unit? It is nothing but a blended measure of CPU, memory, and reads and writes. So that constitutes one unit. So just to compare, how we actually use that. So just look at the basic. If at all it is supporting around 5 DTU, so that is actually translating to, in terms of the transactions per second that we are so used to, it actually translates to around 16,000 odd transactions per hour. If we go to 10 DTUs, it actually translates that to kind of 500 odd transactions per minute. So that's the kind of differentiation it will help, and this is the new term that you should be aware. Azure SQL Database Benchmark, ASDB as it is called. So that's mainly It measures the throughput of each of these service tiers and the performance levels. So what are the service tiers? It's all basic, standard, and premium. Those are the service tiers. And what are the performance levels for you? Within that, you have S0, S1, S2, and so on. Those are the performance levels. So how do you actually measure the throughput? So we do have a guidance around that. So a benchmark is provided for each of these. And this particular left-hand side table that you're seeing, it is out of the Azure documentation that you can quickly find. It is mentioned in the references part of the slide as well. excuse me. So what it uses is, when it benchmarks, it uses a mix of transactions typically used in any OLTP system. And the throughput is actually generated out of that. And the output is actually the transaction rate that you're achieving at that particular performance level. So some of the key terms, DTU, ASDB, transaction rate, those are the ones which we use to really understand what these each of the performance levels and service tiers are capable of. Apart from that, why all it is required? Mainly to have a predictable performance. We want all that, once we are saying, okay, actually the premium version is around 100 DTU that is supporting, it can support up to 100 transactions per second. How do we achieve that? It is kind of, that's what Azure Database is guaranteeing you by having all the benchmarks done. So these are some of the key terms that you should be aware. Having said, let's get into what are the features part of it in Azure SQL Database as far as performance is concerned. So mainly the compression is introduced, row and page compression is available. Whatever you are so used to with in the on-prem version, you have that in the cloud as well. If you understand this, the latest V12 version is based on the SQL 2014 as a core, as opposed to the earlier one. You have table partitioning. It was there earlier as well, but all the limitations around table limitations about the number of partitions supported and all that goes away. You have online reindex rebuilds, those, again, enhancements to that. With block columns as well, you can pretty well get into the online indexing, which was earlier missing. No 2GB limit. I mean, that's the biggest thing, in my opinion. Why? Because now you don't have to be restricted around the transaction size, especially around reindexing the big indexes. You have challenges around that. That limit goes away. So those are, in general, applicable in all editions. As far as Premier edition is concerned, the most important part that has been introduced is column store indexes. I'll show a demonstration around that, the performance difference that you can see between a normal index and the column store index. Parallel processing, this was much asked by the customers. Parallelism was missing in the Azure database, which has been introduced now. So it's not max DOP 1, no longer that. You can actually, with the Premier edition, you have parallelism that in place. In the demonstration, you will see that as well. Apart from that, premium version has been really scaled for better IO latency, IOPS, SSD support, increased log rate, and more DTU ratings as such. Apart from that, we have introduced a lot of DMVs. I mean, whatever you have on-prem, those eventually will keep on coming on the Azure database as well. So almost 100 odd DMVs have got recently added in V12. Some of them I have listed. We'll see a demonstration around that as well. The most important as far as resource statistics on the Azure database is concerned is resource stats, which we will see, bandwidth usage, then the database connection stats, how the clients are connecting, event logs, of course, what's happening within the Azure database, how connections are connecting, various events, errors, warnings, all that is getting captured, which is available through the DMV as well. As you are aware, most of the things in Azure, they are accessible via DMVs or APIs as well, REST APIs or maybe PowerShell as well. So these are the three interfaces by which you programmatically actually extract information. I'm going to talk about DMVs today. We'll have a few demos around that. Apart from that, query profiles, which was available in on-prem version of 2014, that's available as well. We'll quickly get into the demonstration part. So what I've done is, instead of going back and forth between the Azure environment and coming back to the deck, I'll just cover the monitoring part as well, and then get into demos around the performance and the monitoring piece of it. This is the new portal dashboard that you're seeing. You may be used to the old portal, which which Ranga is going to use so that we have a blend of both the old and new portal. You have dashboards, so pretty much all the DTU usage, the storage usage, database usage, all that is pretty much available on the dashboard as well. You can pretty well get all this information in the DMVs as well. Best practices, same as what you typically end up doing in the on-prem version as well. The basics don't go away. Missing indexes, query tuning, all that is pretty much applicable over here as well. Of course, the magnitude of the issues may be lesser on the Azure database side because the servers are kind of scalable there, but still, the fundamentals remain as a programmer, as a developer. We need to be worried about what are the best practices as far as performance are concerned. Missing indexes, query tuning, the sharding part which Ranga just mentioned with the elastic scale that is in the preview mode right now. Maybe at the application level, you can think of functional partitioning to route the requests. Batching the queries, that's the key. You can't go to and forth like insert, insert, insert. You need to batch it out so that the performance is much better in the cloud world. Application tier caching, so that's at the application side. I'll quickly get into the demos.
So as Mandar is getting into the demos, what I must mention in summary on performance is that some of the very, very key challenges that you had. You had a problem called noisy neighbor. How many of you are familiar with the noisy neighbor problem? Since you have a cloud-based service which is shared by different people, what is the effect of one subscriber overusing that service, right? So with the notion of provision, DTUs, predictable performance, that kind of a problem gets removed so that you get more predictability. And by getting very, very closely compatible with the on-premises engine, your favorite DMVs work the same. You're able to get lots of information about query execution and so on. And some of the result yielding techniques like column-based indexes and so on are also going to be available. I just want to take a minute here to invite any questions you have at this point on performance before we get into demos. Okay, great. Sorry, say that again.
Extended properties.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So, what about extended properties? So, not all extended properties are supported, but again, we are in terms of the fact that we are focusing on the performance aspect. A lot of what you want to do on performance or to find out, things about performance can be done with DMVs, and we have had about more than 70, about 77 DMVs have newly been introduced and so on. So, that should help you in many different ways. One more question.
Yes. Just to add, apart from that, extended events are getting, already there kind of in a preview mode. Extended events support is coming to Azure Database.
Okay, yes, question.
Yeah. See, I have actually used both S1, S2 from customers. Like, so we are a startup and having multi-annual.
Can you hold it?
One of the experience which I had was that even for a single query, when we run it on on S1 or S2, and when we run it on S3, there's a drastic difference in performance. Even we say it will support, let's say, 500 transactions per minute or 900 transactions per minute, but the impact of a single query was drastic, and that the time difference was drastic. So is there any benchmark we have for single kind of queries, or how the performance of these different slabs would be? Not like how many transactions they can support, but what is the performance range of various versions of these databases?
Yeah, so even for single queries, there are a lot of tests that individual people have done. I've done lots of tests on single queries also. And we can meet at the end of the session and then we can compare notes on what kind of performance we have got. So I've run it on web, I've run it on business, on S1, S2, S3, as well as on standard, as well as premium tier. And it depends a lot on how much data your table has, what kind of indexes you have, the nature of your query, and so on. My experience with the S series and P has been far different from web and business. And we can compare notes on how S2 versus S3 compare, does against each other and so on. Okay, as we go on, I just want to give out a giveaway for the first question of the conference. So. Thank you.
Okay, so quickly, I'll just show this is already created a fact table with kind of 6 million rows into that. The data was populated using a simple while loop. So this, in the interest of time, has been already populated. What I'm going to demonstrate is a query around that, a simple query. Right now, there is a clustered index, which is the traditional cluster index of SQL Server on city ID and region ID over here. And what I'm doing over here is a simple query, which is kind of doing some grouping and getting some aggregates at city ID and region ID level. The statistics time on is on over here, and so that we can measure the actual timing. So when I run this, if you notice, here is the timing, around 309 to millisecond is what the CPU time is. Now, let's go ahead and create column store index, which I just mentioned. It's available in the premium edition, premium version of it. I'm just dropping this index. So as you're aware, okay, I was dropping column store. Yeah. So that has been dropped, and I'll go ahead and create. So when I create a clustered column store index, you can have that as the only index on that particular table. So that's same as what you do on the on-prem version as well. Lost the connection over here. Okay, it will take a few seconds, and by which this table is having almost 6 million rows over here, and we are creating a column store index, which is a cluster. When you create a clustered column store index, you don't have to give the keys over there. All columns are kind of created in a separate segments, and if you go at the storage part of it, it is. These column segments are actually stored as LOB pages, and here's where it is created. And let's see the performance of that. So the query is run, and it's timing, I'm turning it on. Yeah, look at the difference over here. Whatever it took around 3 odd seconds, it is coming out in 122 millisecond over here. So same table, same data, 6 million rows. We have created just a column store index. So that's the power of column store index over here. The performance gain of huge margin over here. With that, I'll just show you parallelism as well. I'm just checking the plan of that. And if you look at, if you are seeing these parallel operators over here, they are all kind of showing that this query is actually using parallelism. What we can quickly do is we can show it is really using a parallel plan by looking at this parallel property is equal to true over there, right hand side corner. So it's using parallelism as well. That's part of a premium performance level, service tier, I mean. So that's about column store. I'll quickly move on to the table partitioning. So table partitioning, traditionally, it is whatever you have been doing on the on-prem. It is same available over here. What's new thing that is available with the latest V12 version? We have removed all the limitations around table partitioning related to the number of partitions. So those were supported. So I have created a simple partition function around date time over here, a scheme. And in Azure database, you only have one option for creating a scheme. All goes onto the primary file group. You can't create those file groups there. And we have created this table, same fact with the same schema, onto the scheme. And the partitioning key that is used is sales date. I'm just populating some sample records, which are already populated. And let's see the count over here. So there are some rows in this. And what we can quickly do is check whether how many rows are there per partition. So you have some 6 odd partitions over here, and they all have around 999 rows over here. I'll just get how many rows are there in partition 6 over here. There are some 9,000, whatever we saw. And this is the new syntax that has been introduced, which is truncate table. and with partitions. This was, I mean, much demanded feature in the on-prem as well. This is only available on the Azure database. You can just truncate a table. It is internally maybe doing just a switch out the way you're typically doing on-prem. You just truncate with partitions, and here it is gone. We can go back and check how many rows are there. Okay, wonderful. I deleted 6 over here. Okay, let's truncate that. It's truncated, and let's see 6. The rows are gone. So truncate with partition. That's a new thing that is with table partitioning. With that, I'll quickly move on to the DMVs part of it. So as I said, a lot of DMVs have been introduced. I'm just taking a couple of them for the demonstration. We have same query, and we are interested in looking at the profile of that particular query. So I run this, and in the other window, what we will do, we'll see through the DMV how that statistics are coming out. So this is a long-running query for me. I just go, and this is real-time. You're actually getting the query, and it is at the statement level, at the iterator level, rather. It is giving information at the iterator level, which normally whatever set statistics profile on whatever information you are getting, this gives pretty much more detailed information at the iterator level. So you can actually dig down into specific queries, long-running queries, by getting into this DMV and analyze what is going wrong there. So that was on the query profile. One more thing on the column store, which I just want to show. DMVs allow you, like, there is one column store index which we created, and 11 MB is what it is holding it in memory. So with the help of DMVs, I've just queried, okay, column store index was loaded, created, we actually queried, and column store index is there in the memory as well. How much it is actually consuming on my server, that's what you can get through the DMVs. That DMV, there is some logic around that, so it's written in the store procedure, but just I want to mention some of the DMVs those are used in that. Memory cache entries, and you actually try to match the cache store as column store. So that's a basics behind that. Last one in my demo around monitoring. So as you're aware, mainly sysresource stats is the one which whatever you saw on the dashboard on the Azure portal, the same information you can pretty well get through the DMVs as well. So sysresource stats is the DMV by which you get all that information. So I'm just interested in kind of getting average compute utilization over the week. You can play around with what you want over here. You want, like, when it exceeds like this, then only I want to know and stuff like that. You can play around with this query. But this is analyzing and giving, okay, the week's utilization on this particular database was so-and-so.
So typically use sysresource stats as a way to find out actually which particular tier, you know, coming back to your question on. So should I be on S, should I be on the P, or should I be on the basic? You can use sysresource stats itself. You know, run it over a period of time and average and make some decisions.
Yeah. So that's pretty much on the performance and monitoring, the demos that I chose. There are a lot of DMVs which are available. I have chosen a few of them to demonstrate over here. Any questions, if you have, we can take after the session as well. We'll quickly move on to the disaster recovery part, which Ranga will cover.
We can have one question at this point. Thank you. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
What is the downside? I mean, if at all I have to answer it generically, there is no downside as such. You are gaining the performance, of course, the memory footprint, but that, based on you are already in premium performance level and service tier there, you should not be bothered there. So I don't see, generically, there is no challenge in using column store index as such.
So it's pretty much the same principle as you do on premises. So when you create more indexes, it is possible that updates and inserts, if they are extremely large in number, might come under some pressure. There is going to be more disk taken because the index has to get created and so on. So those principles don't go away. So we'll come back. Just hold on to your question.
Yeah, the question specific to Azure, there is nothing specific. Whatever on-prem principles that you are considering for that, they are still applicable as is.
Great. So we have some exciting options for disaster recovery, so we'll go on. And, you know, we're going to be available at the end of this session for, you know, for the next half hour or even longer to answer more questions from you. So don't worry about your questions not getting answered right now if we don't have time. So one of the big challenges on, you know, cloud databases is to do a disaster recovery strategy and do it well, do it efficiently, and do it easily. Doing it well, efficiently, easily is basically the focus of why these options have come into Azure SQL Database. Now, a disaster recovery strategy for Azure SQL Database is as simple as point and click, and then you have a highly customizable, you know, well, fine-grained disaster recovery choices that you can make. And you have to know very little about things like how always-on works or how a cluster has to be set up. None of that is needed now for doing a disaster recovery strategy. So actually, on disaster recovery specifically, Azure SQL Database is much easier to do than you know, SQL on VMs. And you're slowly, you may slowly start to see this trend, you know, picking up where a cloud-based service becomes advantageous in some respects. But in summary, we have certain options that you can use with disaster recovery. Firstly, one on the top, database copy, is what was there even previously. Also, database backup, those options are not going away. You can do it, you can do as many database copies as you want, which is transactionally consistent copies, as many database backups as you want, or do export, import, those options don't go away. Now, the options, you know, below that are all new. So we have automatic backup, which is basically something which you get when you go on to any of these you know, tiers of Azure SQL DB. And this basically, you know, maintains copies. Then you have something called point-in-time restore, by which you can respond to accidental corruptions or accidental queries being run on your database by mistake. You want to recover back to some time, that is point-in-time recovery. Standard geo-replication is a way by which you can create a continuously synced up passive replica. An active geo-replication is one by which you can create several active readable replicas also in different Azure geo regions as well. So those in summary are the options. Now we'll get into the details. So firstly, a database copy has been there all the time. Simplest way to do it, if you are already using database copy, it'll just work. So you execute a database copy, copy database as, database gets copied, and all transactions consistent at the point of time at which the database copy ran, those transactions will get into the database. You use this to implement your own custom you know, strategy for backup if you are not okay with anything else I'm going to talk about later. So it's obviously a copy of the database, which means it's in order to implement a disaster recovery strategy, you also need to keep those copies moved to your disaster recovery location and implement some policy, procedure, or automation to, you know, restore it at a time that you want, and then you are back to where you were. Also, your RPO depends on, or the recovery point objective, which is like how much data you lose, depends on how much time interval there were between two backups, right? Your RTO, or recovery time objective, will really depend on how long it takes to restore the database, which will be related to the size of the database. So this option never goes away. So it could be a little slow, but it's very low cost, fully customizable. Option number two is something that all of you should be using, you know, as soon as you get a chance to use Azure SQL DB. If you're not used, if you're already using, it's probably already enabled for you as well. In automatic backup, what really happens is that scheduled backups of Azure SQL DB are taken automatically according to a predefined schedule, which you do not customize, but which you don't, which you can rely on all of the time. So in automatic backup, we do three kinds of backups. We do full backups, which is entire database backup once in a week. Then we do differential backups, very much similar to differential backups on premises, every 24 hours. And then we do log backups every 5 minutes. So every 5 minutes, you're going to get the transactions that have happened in the last 5 minutes. Every day, you're going to get a differential, and then every week, you have a full backup also. Now, these backups are kept in the Azure data centers, and then backup goes to blob storage. if you're familiar with this idea of readable geo-replication, it's a way by which you can synchronize data between two Azure data centers and have the secondary data center available for REST API kind of querying. So we use that technology in the background to send these copies to a secondary location so that you can start using these for things like point-in-time restore. On the default database that you allocate, you have double the size available for no additional cost. And then, of course, you can do more backups if you want as well. Another very interesting feature that has come into Azure SQL databases, with this kind of automatic backup in place, you can start recovering an accidentally deleted database as well. And I don't mean corrupting a database for which you have point-in-time recovery. If by mistake you delete a database and it's been part of the automatic backup schedule, you can go and recover a deleted database to the point at which it was deleted as well.
Kind of a recycle bin that you're so used to.
Recycle bin, yeah. That's a nice way to look at it. So if you are on to automatic backups, then point-in-time recovery applies, which is why you should be on automatic backups if you are not already on it. So in point-in-time restore, basically what you do is you go to the portal, you go to the database, and then say, I want to recover this database to this particular time interval. Unlike the other disaster recovery features, point-in-time restore does not restrict you to, restore only to this particular day or minute or anything like that. You can basically specify hour, minute that you want to restore to, and how point-in-time restore will work is to take the log backups and then keep on reading the transactions up to that point of time. So with point-in-time restore, you can actually restore to any particular point in time in the past history within what we call as retention period. So what are our retention periods? They are well specified. So within those retention period, you can move your database back to a particular point in time. That's really point-in-time restore. And then once you are doing that restore, it will take some time for it to restore. So we say in about an hour, you should be able to restore point in time. In point in time, we basically use database copies in the local data center. And point in time restore can be done from the portal by point and click. It can be done via REST API, and you can also do it via PowerShell. Second option that we have, if you don't want to deal with backups and you want continuous copies, is standard geo-replication. Standard geo-replication is basically an active and passive topology. In standard geo-replication, it's first of all opt-in. You decide to opt-in that you want standard geo-replication. And when you decide that you want it, you basically say, okay, I want to have a non-readable but passive copy of my database, which is continuously synced. So once you choose that, a database copy will be created for you on a different server, and that copy will be maintained. Now, you don't customize a lot in standard geo-replication, so the server pair will be chosen automatically for you in what we call as paired Azure regions, and the replication will be continuous, happening to the secondary data center. Whenever you think that you want this feature, you can enable it. And whenever you say, I don't want this feature anymore, you can go back and say, I don't want this secondary anymore, so that you can reduce the cost you spend on this. The third interesting thing about this is that it does automatic detection of Azure outage. You basically use standard geo-replication if you want to react to Azure outages in a particular region. So there's a flag that Azure SQL DB maintains, which says that whether a failover can be initiated now or not. In standard geo-replication, you don't failover yourself. You basically watch for this flag, and if the flag becomes enabled, then you implement this failover strategy. Now, in case you do not implement such a failover strategy, and Azure finds out that the region has been down for a particular period, we take a period of 24 hours, and you have not initiated the failover, Azure will initiate that failover automatically, and then failover to the secondary or passive copy. Then the passive copy, it becomes available for querying and then available for writing. Whether you want to keep it like that or not is up to you. You can make a database read-only anytime you want in Azure by saying all database and then set it to read-only. And if you think you want to make it read-write, you can say all database and then set the database to read-write, and the secondary becomes read-write. So that's how standard geo-replication works. It's basically a safety model, not a load balancing or performance model. Passive copy, you know, automatically chosen to react to data center outages. Not a lot of customization. Then you have Active Geo Replication, which is the fully customizable featured version. In Active Geo Replication, you can have 4 secondary copies. And when you create Active Geo Replication, you can choose which data center you want to keep the geo replicated copy. So if I'm in US East, I can use a totally different data center in a different geo region and say I want to replicate to that. Obviously, replication speed will be faster if you're closer, but you have the freedom to choose any of these. Then having chosen that, Azure SQL DB will replicate transactions pretty fast, you know, to between those two databases. Sometimes the replication latency is not even noticeable between when you have set up Active Geo Replication. And then the secondary copy is read-only. So you can use it as a disaster recovery option, but a lot of customers use this as a load balancing option also, because since the secondary is readable, some of the read workload, reporting workload, is, you know, sent to the secondary, and then, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 secondaries can be used for doing reads of the geo-replicated workload. So it's automatic, any Azure region, and then same thing, you can basically do it with REST, API, PowerShell, and so on, similar RTO of less than 1 hour for doing that. Let's take a look at some of these options from the Azure portal. So on the Azure portal, if you click your database, which you want to work with, and then you go to the dashboard view, you start seeing more things. So just so that we mix up, I have chosen the old portal, and then you know, Mandar in his demo used the new portal. So if you see, you have something called oldest restore point mentioned in the dashboard. This basically says up to what you can really restore a database too. And then that also depends on the fact that automatic you know, backups have been enabled. And then on this database, what you can also do is you can go to this geo replication tab, and then you can basically say, all right, I want to create a secondary. So you create a secondary in Azure by saying add secondary. And when you say add secondary, you have the option of online non-readable, which is basically standard geo replication. On-rain read-only, which is basically active geo-replication. You choose which data center you want to replicate to. The default is the pad region, but then if you want, you can choose any of these regions in active geo-replication. And then having chosen the region, you choose a server, which means you should have created a server prior to that. I'm just going to choose one of these servers and then say yes. Database starts getting created. It takes a couple of minutes. It will also say that there's a billing impact because the secondary is also going to get costed. So are you aware of the billing impact? And then you say yes, it goes ahead. Now, like I said, you can do up to 4 active secondaries. I have already created one, and then, you know, the second one starts getting created. Now, as it gets created, you can also run queries to find out how this whole stuff is working out. By using some of the DMVs, which Mandar mentioned, for example. Now we have a DMV called Operation Stats, which basically gives you information about what operations have been executed on the database. So Sys Operation Stats will quickly report that create continuous database copy has been initiated, and that's in progress. It is the database that I just now started to replicate. And then it'll also say that the status description is in progress, which means it has been started. And then when you create a continuous copy, few things happen. First of all, the database needs to get backed up and seeded and then moved to the other location. During this point, when it's in progress seeding time, the secondary database is not transactionally consistent. So we don't have any queries at this point of time. And then it goes through the seeding process, becomes available for transactions, and at that point, you can basically start doing queries on that. As this goes on, what you can also do is look at point in time restore. As you can see, it says seeding 15%. It takes a little while for it to finish. Now, on the dashboard, if you go to the databases icon, you will have this this option now becoming available called Restore. So on your particular database, if you say Restore, then you get this dialog box where you can either move a slider or you can specify a restore time. So you can go and say, I want to restore this to a particular point in time. You can change the hours and minutes. And then, you know, or go and, you know, change the slider and say, okay, now restore this database or move it back to a point in time. So it's point in time is really very simple. And then what it will do is it will create a database named as your database, suffix, you know, date and time, and then it will basically start restoring transaction logs and start creating a secondary copy over here, which is basically consistent up to that particular point of time when you actually started to, the restore to. Now, as this is happening, like I told you, your application can have multiple copies. So I have already created a copy, as you might notice, which says secondary and which is basically active. And on that, I can actually start, you know, firing queries, you know, find out how to find out information about the database, as well as to get you know, data about the whole process here. So on my setup, I basically switch over to the primary master first, so that I am so that I know I'm on the right place. So when I execute this, I see that I'm on a particular server and a particular master. Now, I can also go to the secondary since I have already restored it. I can fire the same query, and then you see that the secondary on which I fired the query is also active. You can do similar querying on the secondary server itself. If you query on the master, that will actually tell you more about what's happening in terms of the copy that we executed. If you look at this, it says create continuous database copy, and it also says that the state description is completed, which means the copy that I just now initiated has also finished, and it's made active for querying. Now, queries between, the replication between this is pretty fast. So in this example, I am, you know, creating a table and, you know, executing some query on the primary database, which is inserting something like 100,000 rows. Now I'm doing it as a batch from this conference room, which means this is basically going to execute for a long time. It's going to send one insert by one insert, and you know that's going to go into Azure SQL DB. Now on another connection, I'm basically trying to find out what is the row count on that. So I have 3, 5, 8, 6 rows inserted onto the primary, and I'm on the primary database. Now on the secondary, let me fire the same query and see how much of this has got. On the secondary, when I fire, you'll see that 6084 has got. It basically doesn't mean that the secondary is ahead of the primary. That is never possible. It just means that from the time I took to switch between two you know, SQL management windows, additionally, not only did those 3,000 original rows get replicated, another 3,000 rows got inserted and it got replicated. And we can always confirm that by you know, firing this query on the primary. You'll see that the primary has moved ahead. The count that I'm seeing now is 13,682. And now the count I'm seeing here is 15,219. So basically, replication happens pretty fast. You can do various tests, increase the size of the rows, increase the number of rows inserted, and so on. In my experience, I have found that time it takes for the data to reach the primary little more than the time it takes to replicate transactions as they happen between primary and secondary. It is always possible, though, in contrived situations that you might have a replication delay, and there are DMVs which can basically be used to monitor that as well. And then on the secondary master, or on the primary master, you can run a number of queries which will basically tell you how those DMVs are performing as well. The other thing also is that on the primary, you can find out whether there are any you know, replication lags, for example. So on the primary DB, on the master, you can use these other DMVs like sys database copies, copy status to find out whether the databases have been copied. And then you can also find out by looking at the operations themselves to find out if any of these have had any issues as well. I will stop my query on the primary, and then we can show you a couple of other things. You can basically find out whether a database is read-only by querying the database property, extended the database property, and you can set it read-only anytime you want. And then, like I said, on Azure SQL database, you also have this nice feature of being able to restore a deleted database if you want. So on the deleted database tab, you have the databases that have been previously deleted. So you can go to any of these databases that have been previously deleted and say, now it's time for you to restore this database. So restore this database and then, you know, get it back. Obviously, deleted database is not a point in time restore. It's a point of delete restore. So at that particular point of time, it will basically take the database that was deleted and then, you know, bring it back to the current situation. That's mostly what I wanted to cover. And then just so that we all are on the same page, you can some of the stuff that I showed you on portal, you could also do the same thing on the through the REST API and PowerShell as well. And on the portal, if you notice, the database that I created just now with where I was inserting, it's become available, it's become online as well. And the database that I restored also has restored, and the deleted database is in fact getting restored. So things happen pretty quickly in Azure SQL DB as well. Okay, that was a tour of some of the key DR features in Azure SQL database, which brings us to the end of the technical part of this session, but questions are welcome. So yeah, go ahead.
I have two questions. One thing is...
So just before you start, there are a number of good references on all of these topics. Of course, you can meet us at the end of the session, but you know, go through some of those references. We'll share it with the organizers. Yes.
Regarding the replication perspective, can I customize my geolocations? Because like in my applications, I feel this area could be more secure. Example, I can say that, European or something like that. So can I specify the same?
You want to specify?
I would like to replication of database in a particular geolocation.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Because as of now, we are...
I've showed you while I created geo-replication that if you're going for active geo-replication as opposed to standard geo-replication, you can say that for a primary server, I would like to replicate to this secondary server, which could be in Europe, it could be in Australia, it could be in Singapore.
Okay.
And at some point, India also, by the way. Yeah.
India Center is yet to start, right?
Sorry?
So India data center is yet to start, right? So then only I can able
lot
to.
There's a lot of noise around what you're saying. Can you say
no,
that?
No, India data center is yet to start, right?
I'm saying, I said in some at some point of time.
No, we are planning. So we are using a VMware and we have a different databases.
Sure.
So like what I want is like that database has to sync to my local database. Is it possible? Syncing.
So geo replication is all done and managed in Azure.
Okay.
For syncing to local database, there are different other options, which we can talk about at the end of this session. Yeah.
Okay.
So we do have a chalk talk as well. Maybe you want to step in there.
At end of the day, we are doing a chalk talk on DR, not restricted to Azure SQL DB. And okay, yeah, I think
nice question. So let's give out a giveaway.
Last question.
Does active replication, geo-replication have any performance hit?
Not really noticeable. So this active geo-replication and standard geo-replication are asynchronous replication. So they don't hit the performance of the transaction itself. It is happening in the background.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I know there are hands up. Yeah. I know there are hands up. So people who want to ask questions, meet us at the end of the session. We're going to wait as long as you want and answer more questions. Thank you.
If you have any specific question related to DR, you can definitely step in there as well. Thank you.